For message this morning, I will eventually come around to reading it, but we'll be reading out of Matthew 15. So we're going through a little thing at my house right now. Probably everybody that has a three-year-old has gone through this stage. And it can be very annoying as a parent. George mentioned in devotions this morning about sometimes we don't see on our children's level. And this is probably one of those areas. And a lot of times I fail in patience in this area. I just do. And the thing that's going on is, why? Everything you tell the little boy to do, it's why. Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? Why is this way? And you know, I'm just fine with children asking why. That's fine. There's a curiosity installed in children, and it's a good thing. Curiosity is a good thing. It's how they learn. I'm not knocking children asking why this morning. Let them be curious. Let them do some foolish things like I did as a child. Let them figure some stuff out. I know I had a lot of curiosity as a young man, and sometimes I learned the hard way. I remember distinctly exactly what happens when you plug a flat screwdriver into a wall outlet. I know exactly what happens. There's probably still a black spot there. I know exactly what happens when me and little brother put too much faith in an umbrella and hurl ourselves off the gazebo roof. I know exactly what happens. And you figure out these things by curiosity. So I don't know. Let your children have a few hard knocks in life, as long as it's not too dangerous. And it's okay for them to ask why. Let them ask and try to. I try to answer all the whys. Did you know if you follow the why bunny trail long enough, it eventually comes down to two answers. It's because I told you so, or because I told you to, and because that's the way God made it. That's about where I usually end up at the end. There might be other answers, there might be better answers, but at the end of it all, at the end of all the whys, something's going to happen. You're still going to obey me and listen to what I tell you to do. I tell you to go wash your hands, you ask me why, I'll explain it to you, but you're still going to obey me. That's the way it is. And I came to the conclusion, I'm not altogether different from my little boy in relating to God. Sometimes God asks me to do things, and I'm like, why? Why do I have to do this? Why? Why are things the way they are? Maybe God gets frustrated with me sometimes in all my whys. Why do people hurt each other? Do you ever wonder that? Physically or emotionally, or why do they do it? Why does God let churches split? Why does God let some marriages fail or struggle? Why does God let some people walk through such painful life changes? Why does God allow some people to have almost no chance at all at life? Why? I'm like, why, God? And I finally came to the conclusion, I don't have to understand everything. I want to know. I want to know why God allows all this stuff, but I don't have to understand. And I don't think God cares if I ask him why. But at the end of it all, he still insists on obedience. He still asks that we obey him no matter what the outcome is going to be. He made each one of us with a plan and a purpose. And only me and you can fulfill that purpose. And we're not perfect in all this. And the devil's out to confuse us and to muddle up God's plan as much as he can and try to help us he wants to get control of our faith and to take our faith in God away from us. And at the end of it all comes down to that little word of faith. That little word of faith. This was not going to be a faith message when I started studying for it. That was not at all my intentions, but that's where I ended up, so that's what we're going to talk about. Hebrews, says, without faith, it is impossible to please him. Impossible. God demands faith in him, even if it's hard. I wonder sometimes, I might be wrong in this, you ladies might disagree, but I almost wonder if the ladies don't struggle with this quite as much as us men. Now, that I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems like, for me especially, it's hard to put my faith in anything, and even God at times. We men are visual creatures, and we want to know. We talked about that some in Sunday school class. We want to know what's going to happen. We want to know what's going on. I was moving a couple of buildings for some people here several years. It's been a little while ago, a couple of years ago. And the more I was with these, I was following them. They were taking me to their new property. And the more I followed them, the less faith I had in them. We were back in the sticks, and we were already back in the sticks. And then they turned down a pig trail, and then they turned down a bunny trail, and then it felt like we were going down a frog trail. It kept getting smaller and smaller. And finally they stopped, and they came back to me, and I rolled down the window, and they said, we can't find our property. We bought property back here, and we can't find it. And I lost all faith in these people's ability. You can't find your own property. How am I going to help you? And they finally found what they thought was their property, and I ended up dumping off the buildings, and I was very relieved to just leave the place. But sometimes, I mean, you talk about losing faith in somebody. I lost all faith in these people that they had any idea what was going on. Sometimes it seems like God, I'm trying to follow God's path. I'm trying to follow what God laid out for me. And I'm pretty sure God doesn't know where he's leading me. Y'all ever got that feeling? Like, God, I'm about to think that I just start having my doubts. And it feels like he's leading us down a dark trail. And my first question is, why? Why do I have to do this, God? I tell y'all, I'm still not sure why God wants me to be deacon of Strawberry Mennonite Church. I don't know why. I'd never wanted this job, and I've been trying to accept it, and I'm still not sure I've accepted it. Why does he want me for this job? Somebody else could have been much more capable. I finally decided God probably needed me to get out of my little rut. I was pretty content just being a church bench warmer. It wasn't too big of a deal just to show up on Sundays and Wednesday nights. And I think God needed me out of my comfort zone is what it is. But regardless of why, it comes down to whether or not I'm going to obey what God asked me to do and have faith that he has my best intentions in mind. And that's not always easy. It's not always easy. We'll read Matthew. I would like to read a story about a lady in Matthew. I'm amazed at this woman's faith. And she didn't even ask why once. I read this little story here several weeks ago, and it made an impression on me. We'll read Matthew 15, 21 through 28. Then Jesus went thence and departed into the coasts of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coasts and cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil. And he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and besought him, saying, Send her away, for she crieth after us. And he answered and said, I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. And she said, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. And Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith, be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. Isn't that kind of almost a bizarre little story? And I was kind of baffled when I first read over it. It seemed like such a coarse, to the point, not much of an exchange between Jesus and this woman, and such a brief little encounter. So just for a little background, Jesus was worn out by the scribes and the Pharisees, if you would read the first part of 15. He needed a break. He went through some stuff there. And even it seemed like some of his disciples were questioning some of his teachings. And maybe the human side showed of him just a little bit in the fact that he decided to go on a little bit of a vacation. So they were by the Sea of Galilee, and it says he departed thence in 21 and went to Tyre and Sidon there, which would have been about 30 miles as the crow flies. It was over on the Mediterranean Sea. It was heathen country over there. I'm not sure why Jesus went on vacation to heathen country, but he did. I guess he wanted to see the beach or the Mediterranean Sea. And we have the same story in Matthew 7, and in verse 24 it says he was staying at a house. So he had a house out on the seashore. Maybe it was like an Airbnb, I don't know. And this woman of Canaan came. She came to a group of men, which was a little bit unusual. One woman coming to a group of men like this. But she had apparently heard about Jesus somehow, some way. And she knew there was power in that name. And in verse 22, she came and cried, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil. You see the love of a mother here, a deep love of her mother. Nothing seems to stress out a mother quite as much as a sick child that they just can't get this child better. You know what I mean? There's something about a sick child that we're nearly, it gets to working on a mom. And that's all right. That's all right. And so we have this woman with a demon-possessed child living in a heathen country, and you don't have the power of God to deal with it. That's the definition of hopeless. That's hopeless right there. There's not enough medication in the world to fix that problem. And so she went to the one and only person that she knew could solve her problem. And look at verse 23. Whatever happened to the Jesus we know and read about all our life long? Did his love go on vacation too? Look at verse 23. But he answered her not a word. Not one word. Silence. He didn't even talk to her, almost like he ignored her. He could have at least said, a demon-possessed girl? I mean, y'all live in, this is heathen country. Y'all worship, there's idol worship going on over here. What do you expect? He didn't say that. He didn't say anything. He didn't say a word. He gave her the silent treatment. Maybe that's where us men sometimes get it. Y'all men ever get to thinking about something or whatever's going on in your life and you're like me and you kind of clam up about it? You just don't say much? I guess now we can say we're being like Jesus when we are like that, huh? He answered her not a word. And the disciples started coming around to Jesus, and they were like, send her away. She's crying after us. I was down, maybe one of them came and said, I was down there trying to fish, and she was hollering and scaring all the fish. I don't know what they came and said, but they were starting, this lady was starting to really annoy the disciples. And they're like, send her away, get her out of here. If you're not going to fix her problem, make her leave so we can at least be on vacation. Moving on to verse 24, and finally Jesus started talking to her here. But look at what he said. I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. He told her, he's there for the Jews. I'm not here for you. Why this statement? Moving on to verse 25, and then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. Lord, help me. She wasn't done begging yet. She could have stomped off and said, Jesus is not who I thought he was. He's not the man that everybody was bragging him up to be. Listen to the way he talked to me. He said, I'm not here for you. I'm here for the lost sheep, for the house of Israel. But that's not what she did. She came back and she worshiped. And she very meekly asked, Lord, help me. No, that was later. I'm sorry. Verse 25, it just says she's worshipped him. And then in verse 26, Jesus started talking again. And he still doesn't seem like he was very nice. Listen to what he said in 26. It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. He basically called this woman a dog in Middle Eastern, in a Middle Eastern setting. Remember what Tony King, when he had that talk on Muslims, what that culture thinks of dogs? Not exactly what you call flattering. It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. He was saying, why, I'm not taking my power and giving it to you right now. It's still for the Jews. He was basically telling her, yeah, he's still here for the Jewish people, and it's not time for her yet. He was telling her he still has work to do with the Jews before he's ready to go over to the Gentiles. After they reject him, he will come to the Gentiles. He will come there eventually, but he's not there yet. And in verse 27, and she says, truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table. So she's calling herself, basically she called herself what Jesus called her, a dog. But she said, look, even the dogs in the master's house get to eat from the crumbs that fall from the table. Even if she's a dog, she still can please have one crumb. She doesn't need all of Jesus' power. She doesn't even need him to come to her house. All she wants is one crumb from the table. And she's telling him that she knows he's not done teaching the Jews yet and preaching to the Jews. And she knows it's not her time yet, but she still wants one crumb if she can. Just one crumb will cure my problem with this demon, is what she was asking. And she even admitted, kind of in a roundabout way, of already being a follower of Jesus, by calling it the master's table. In a way, she was calling him the master. It took me a while to wrap my head around this story, and it seemed like they used such weird terms, if you want to say it that way. It was kind of hard for me to grasp it all. But in verse 28, that was all it took. Her asking of one crumb of Jesus' power was all that it took. The blessed words of, O woman, great is thy faith, be it unto thee even as thou wilt. Such a brief encounter, such a roundabout way of talking to each other in riddles and rhymes. But that was all it took. And what wonderful words for this mom to hear. Can you imagine? She knew Jesus had the power and that he was her only hope. And she had complete faith that he could heal her daughter. and she wasn't going to leave until she had done everything she could to get that one crumb of power. And then it says her daughter was made whole from that very hour. I can imagine she went running home with complete confidence that her daughter was at home, completely healed, and probably doing normal little girl things. She wasn't demon possessed anymore. And she probably, maybe somebody came running out the drive to meet her and said, "Your daughter's better. It just happened. It was all of a sudden she was just better." And she probably said, "Yeah, I already knew it. I knew when he said my wish was granted, I knew it would be granted." Can you imagine the faith that this woman had, and the persistence of this woman is astounding. And here I call myself a Christian. I was raised in a Christian home. I've been heard and taught about faith my whole life. I know Jesus is capable. And yet I have such trouble having a faith, even a simple faith like this woman. What's the matter with me? Instead of simply believing that God's going to take care of all my problems and that God has the ability to take care of my problems, I want to think that I have to do it all myself. I want to think that I have to do everything I can on my own power. I have to do everything I can to make it work my way, and then maybe at the tail end I'll trust God. Well, why do I have that mindset? Maybe y'all don't, but I do. And I want to be clear, faith is not an excuse to be lazy. I don't think that at all. I can have all the faith in the world that God's going to send down angels to fill up my wood stove every morning, and I'll just sit in the house and drink coffee. That's not how it works. God looks down and he sees a healthy me sitting on the recliner. He's probably going to let the fire go out and I'll have to go out there and put wood in the stove. I don't think God's going to do things like that for us if we're capable. But what about when the things that we're not, that are out of our control, and I'm still trying to grasp it and reel it back into my control, and I want to do everything I can to make this work? All of us will at some time in our life come to a place when we realize that we're at the absolute end of our resources, and then what are we going to do? Where are we going to go? And so many times I push on past that point, and I think I can make this work. I can do it. And that's where I tend to mess up a lot of stuff. That's where I mess up. God wants us to let go and let him do it. That's how he wants us. Did you ever think about it? Why does God demand faith? Why does he even care? Well, what's it matter to him? I mean, at the end of the day, he's still in control. He's still God. Well, why does my faith in him please him? And I finally came to the conclusion, Hebrews does tell us it's impossible to please him without faith. But I finally came to the conclusion, one of the reasons God wants me to have faith is for my own good. Nobody else we know knows what the future is going to be tomorrow. God can see the future and we can't. And our good and loving God has our best interest in mind. That's part of the reason he wants us to have faith in him. We can try and predict all we want to. We can be as wise as we want to. We can do all the research we want to and get all the advice from others we want to. But the fact of the matter is, I don't even know what's going to happen the rest of the day. Forget tomorrow or next week. And the fear of the unknown is a mentally challenging thing. You can almost drive yourself nuts wondering what's going to happen in the future. We want to know why, and we want to know what's going to happen, but we just can't. But you know what? God does. And so why do I find it so hard to put faith in him? Another thing I decided when I was studying this message, and I might be wrong on this, but I think everybody has faith. Is that a crazy statement? I think everybody in the world has faith. It's when people don't have faith anymore is when they get tired of living. But the problem with people and their faith is they don't put it in God. And that's where the problem is. That's where people start going loopy, if you want to say it that way. People, the second they lose their faith in God, they put it somewhere else. Or maybe they never had a faith in God. They'll put it a lot of times into the government. Why would you put your faith in the government? Did you ever think about that? They can't even do math up there. Did you see the national debt recently? Why would you put your faith there? Some people put their faith in their guns or their stockpile of food that they have or their money or the position of power they find themselves in. Or maybe they're a big, strong guy and they put it in their physical strength. They can take anybody down and sit on them if they want to. Maybe they put it in their intellect. They're smart. They went to school for a long time, and they're a professor, or they're just naturally smart. People put their faith in the wrong things all the time. And I dare say, I think I'm right, everybody has faith. They just put it in the wrong things. Why would you trust in those things? I think that's part of the reason why the story of the Haitian kidnappers was so inspiring to so many people. What a beautiful example of faith that those people had. They had nothing other than God to trust in, and you know what? That was all that they needed. And they also had to have action with their faith. They had to get up and go when God told them it was time to go. They didn't just sit there and wait for a helicopter to rappel them to safety. They actually had to it's very evident they had their faith in God. It's such an inspiring story. But they also had to be, when God said go, they had to go. They had to be a doer. So you and me get to decide today what we're going to put our faith in. Is it going to be in a God that we know loves us and actually knows what's going to happen tomorrow and the next week and next year and however long till the Lord returns? And I don't know what y'all are facing. I don't know each of y'all's individual lives that well. I don't even know what all I'm going to face the rest of the day. But I get to choose. I get to choose what I'm going to trust in. And every day I get to choose what I'm going to believe in and what I'm going to have faith in. And every one of y'all get to decide the same thing. Every one of y'all. And one of these days, what are you going to do when we're at the end of our rope and we've done everything we can, but we're still going to try a little bit harder? We're still going to push just a little bit past. And you'll be like me and that's when I mess it up. I don't know why it gives God such great joy to see us put a childlike faith in Him. I don't know why, but God loves it when He sees His children down here on earth just have a complete faith in Him. He doesn't care if we ask why. He doesn't care if we don't understand everything. Just trust Him. That's what He's asking of us. He's saying, child, I know what's best for you. I know what your future holds. And would you please just trust me? And you know what? When we reach that point where we can actually relax and have that faith in God that He so longs for us to have in Him, that's when we can live a successful life. That's all I have for the message this morning. Why don't we kneel for prayer?